This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottillo along with Charlie Long. Want to tell everybody at 520, Ugo Amadi joins us. I would say a new Saint, but he's been on the team before. So Ugo joins us to talk about his return to the Saints, returning for a third year in the black and gold. And at 540, one of our, man, best guests we got, Scott Spinelli, does a great job. Former college basketball coach, now analyzes the college and pro scene. He'll break down the Sweet 16 tournament. And want to tell everybody at 6:30, it'll be a pregame, 7 o'clock first pitch, as LSU plays Mississippi State. Charlie, before we go to Jimmy, let me answer this text. And I've had it before, and texter 6731 says, Mike, amid the troubles with the law, do you see Karen Lacy falling in the draft? I saw where somebody rated him as a third-round pick. If Lacy is available in the later rounds, do you take a chance on him? I can tell you, a few people have talked to me about Karen. He grew up in Thibodaux, right up the road from me. I saw him in high school. He was a really good basketball player. Then he figured out they got a lot of 6'2" basketball players, so he decided to really concentrate on playing wide receiver. Because of the allegations, and they are serious, and he'll have his day in court, some teams have taken him off their board completely. So it'll just be, I think he'll get an opportunity. Now, first of all, everything's got to be cleared court-wise and however it's looked at in the court of law, but some serious allegations on Karen, and again, he will have his day in court to talk about it, but I would think at best he would be a late-round pick, at best. But yep. I got a feeling he may go completely undrafted. We saw what Lael Collins, what happened with him. This is the guy projected as a first-round pick. He didn't get picked at all. He was a free agent. And so with Karen Lacy, just terrible situation, but especially for the gentleman that got killed in that wreck. I think at best it would be a late round pick. But to be honest with you, I think because of situations still being handled court wise, he'll probably go undrafted. And he would have been a third round pick. He's a big receiver, can catch the football. He's got a lot of football. I guess the term arrogance is there because he thinks he can catch anything over anybody, and that's great to have. He plays with a lot of confidence out on the field, has bettered his eye-hand coordination to catch the ball. I think at times he was trying to run with the ball before he caught it, and he would have some easy drops. And then Bobby would always text me, "Man, your boy dropped the ball." Nah. Okay, I got nothing to do with that. But he got better at it, and also as a route runner, he would have been a third-round pick. But I think because of things off the field, he'll probably end up being undrafted. Let's go to our Oakwood Hard Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Jimmy and Gretna. Jimmy, I hope you're there now. You're in the huddle with me and Charlie.
Hey, yeah, man. Hey, look, let me say this. Talent, you bring up some good points there. Look at Trey Lance. He's now going from the third overall pick. Now he's playing in the Canadian Football League. I kind of feel like he didn't really get a chance, but I guess the scouts and the coaching saw what they saw, and it was a overvalued guy at three overall. Never thought I'd say Nick Mullins would have a longer career than Trey Lance, but here we are. Let me switch over. Obviously, a great baseball game tonight, LSU, Mississippi State. Switching over to basketball, the Pelicans host Steph Curry tomorrow night. He's coming back from injury. You know, Mike, Charlie, we've won enough games to where we're probably not going to get the number one pick. I mean, I would be fine with us losing out. Obviously, I like the development of Carlo Mackovich and Misi. Carlo had 19 points the other night, so this has given us a chance to see some younger talent with Zion being out so much and the other starters, Herb, Trey Murphy, out for the rest of the season. My question to you guys is this. With so few Cinderellas in the tournament, we know Cooper Flagg, if he comes out, which it sounds like Charlie was saying he is, he's like the
I'd be shocked if he came back. Coming out. I don't care what kind of NIL
Jimmy,
deal.
The whole thing with Cooper Flagg, like, look, I get, the people saying that he loves it at Duke. He loves it at Duke. Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. That
it ain't
going
to happen, boys.
Number
I hate
one
to break
overall
it to you.
Pick money's different.
Well, my question to you guys is this. Let's say we're the fifth, sixth, or seventh pick, somewhere in that vicinity.
God.
Are there any guys we should look for in the tournament tonight, the big dance this weekend and starting tonight, that you see as a possibility around that spot in the draft that we can kind of see what they look like?
I know Charlie's got one.
Charlie?
Derek Queen
from
Maryland. We talked with Coach Boog about him yesterday. He said that he's probably going to end up being a top five pick in the draft. One of the most recent mocks I saw, Mike. So the best way I could describe this draft to folks is that the number one overall pick with Cooper Flagg, there's a gap after that. And then the number two overall pick is likely going to be Dylan Harper from Rutgers, the guard. Then I think there's another gap after him, and then there's two wings on the board. Ace Bailey, who's a wing from Rutgers, and then VJ Edgecombe, who's a wing from Baylor. So those are your top four prospects. They're basically locked in stone. After that, it kind of gets up in the air. The most recent mock I saw, and I really liked it, had Derek Queen going at 5 to the Brooklyn Nets. And obviously, we won't know the official order until the draft lottery happens.
And the Nets have 4 first-round picks?
The Nets have 4 first-round picks.
Good Lord.
Yeah, no. So that was the whole thing with this mock draft that I had seen, was that they draft Derek Queen as their 5th overall selection, and then they kind of built around him, so to speak, with some of their other draft picks. Like, they took Alabama's Mark Sears, who will be a later first-round draft pick, so I'm not going to mention him. Derek Queen from Maryland is one of them. Con Knipple, who's kind of a wing forward for Duke as well, is another one that's going to be probably a top 10 pick. Let's see who else that's still playing right now. Because I would say Trey Johnson, but he's out.
Yeah.
The wing from Texas.
I saw a mock draft that had him going in the 6th spot, Trey Johnson. So that would be in the area, Jimmy, that we're looking at of when the Pelicans, they'll probably get slotted to pick in that particular slot. And doesn't OKC, somebody has a protected pick that they have?
So it's Philadelphia. Philadelphia is openly tanking. Like, trying to charge to the finish line, pick up as many losses as possible. Right now, Mike, they're in the 5 spot. If their pick falls out of the top 6, it goes to OKC. So they're doing all they can to land in the top 6 and make sure that they keep that pick. So that's something to keep an eye on. With the Pelicans right now, they're 20-53 overall. They're at the 4th spot in this lottery system. They're behind Utah, Washington, who they're not going to catch. Charlotte's the only team that they could potentially catch for the 3rd best odds, but even then, it's a little bit of a stretch. It almost feels like the Pels are kind of locked into that 4 spot, which, if you're talking about where they could end up, you have a 48.1% chance to land in the top 4, which isn't as good as it would be if you were in the top 3 pick, like the top 3 worst records. but you're at the fourth spot right now. You're probably not going to get into that top three, unfortunately. So 48.1% chance to get into the top four. And then the lowest pick that you could get is the eighth overall selection. So that's your range, 1-8, if you end up with the fourth worst record in the NBA.
Thanks so much for the call, Jimmy. We appreciate it. I was going to say, well, what happened to them, the USM, when they played the Colonels? But he dropped out. But we'll talk about that another time. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. And Saints defensive back Ugo Amadeh will join us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, he's not a new member of the Saints because he's entering the third year. Ugo Amadeh, Saints defensive back. Ugo, thanks so much for joining us and congratulations on a new deal with the Saints.
Thank y'all so much, man. Thank y'all for having me on your show, too.
Ugo, I don't think I've ever asked you this. I know we've talked before, but what's your... If you had to say my best position out on the football field, what would it be?
I mean, it's tough, man. I play all of them, man. So, and they all go backwards. So, I mean, it's hard to just pinpoint one because I like them all.
I know to play in this league for any length of time, you got to be versatile. You got to be able to play. And you were involved in a lot of the nickel and dime schemes. And for the people out there listening, you know, just the regular two corners, two safeties, man, that's rarely seen today. I've seen a lot of teams, they in nickel to start the game. And so how that has really changed pro football in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's changed a lot because, you know, back in the day, there was no nickel. They used to call it like a star position, but it was never heightened. But now the league is changing to so much of a passing league where the nickel is just as valuable as having another linebacker on the field, you know. So I have seen a lot of teams just playing nickel throughout that whole game. And if your nickel can cover, tackle, get off blocks, and blitz just like a linebacker, he's fit for your defense.
One of the things in watching you, and you brought it up just now, the ability to tackle. And it's funny, Vic Fangio, we had him on when he wasn't employed, right after he had got fired as being the head coach of the Broncos. Now he's defensive coordinator with the Eagles. And he says, one of the things that I watch today is, can guys tackle, secondary people tackle? And that's a strength. You're not the biggest guy in the world, but you are a really good open field tackler.
Yeah, man, I really take pride in that. Really, from my college coach at Oregon, Coach Neal, he really like harped on us to like making sure you get the guy down, because getting the guy down and getting off the blocks were the two keys for him. And he always would tell us, he said, one of the hardest things to do in football, especially in NFL, is tackling. And that's one of the most things you don't practice, because you want to save your body till the game day. So you have to continue to put your mind in those game reps. So just practice on wrapping somebody up, because you won't be able to practice it at full speed in practice. So you just got to get your mind ready to go.
Ugo, before I start asking you about some of the new Saints defensive coaches, I wanted to get your thoughts on Phil Galliano. I mean, when you first got here in 2023, you played a lot on special teams. Galliano was an assistant special teams coach. Now with Coach Rizzi moving on, he was promoted to special teams coordinator. Your thoughts on Phil and what he can bring the special teams unit?
I think it's big for them to bring him back because, one, he already knows the players. You know, the depth chart didn't change too much. And having him there, he knows everybody's strengths. And I knew just when he was the assistant that he had his own little, you know, own little ways of getting the thing, getting job done, you know, of how he would do it if he was to be able to take over, you know. But I feel like I have a lot of confidence in him, one, because he knows us, and two, that it's going to be a lot of similar carryover I would expect, you know, but I didn't ask him, but I would expect it to be a lot of similar carryover that we'll all be able to adjust to quickly.
Ugo, I have to laugh when you said that. When Coach Rizzi took over as the head coach, he was doing the Monday night coaches show. And we asked him about Phil Galliano. He said, I give him all the work I don't want to do. He said he's in charge now. He's the special teams guy. He's got to handle all that work I don't want to do anymore.
Yeah, so now he's going to give it to his assistant. It'll be a domino effect now.
Have you had a chance to talk to Brandon Staley and kind of his outlook on exactly how he's going to use you in defensively? Because he plays a lot of different schemes. And, again, it's a chess match between the offense and the defense. But how much time have you got to talk to Coach Staley?
I haven't talked to Coach Staley yet, but I've always watched his game from afar. You know, they always played on Monday night games, especially when he's with the Chargers, like the, I think, 2022 season, when he's with Daryl Herbert. I just always watched their defense. I was like, oh, they're a different defense that we had from the year before, but I feel like we have the players to get his job done.
It was kind of interesting seeing what the Saints did this offseason with the coaching staff, especially on the defensive side. They dipped into the college ranks a lot. And I just want to get your thoughts on, you know, Terry Joseph, the defensive pass game coordinator, Bo Davis, like all these names that are coming from the college ranks up to the NFL. Some of them already have the NFL experience, but, you know, I guess we'll start with Coach Joseph, who, you know, spent a couple years at Texas. Mike's very familiar with him. Have you spoken with him yet?
He's a Louisiana guy, yeah. So I know you'll do you good, Hugo.
Okay, good. But now I haven't talked to any of the new coaches yet, but I feel like with bringing the college coaches into the NFL, I think that's a new burst of energy, you know, just excitement of having to coach guys now that are responsible, that, you know, you can count on, you know, these are guys that take pride in what they do, especially with our squad. So I feel like it's a good sign of bringing these college coaches into the professionals.
Your thoughts on Alante Taylor? He's a really talented young man playing the corner position. He's played both outside and also in the nickel. Your thoughts on Alante? Because I look at him, that guy's got a lot of talent. It's just finding, I think, the right niche for him on the defensive side.
Alante is a very talented guy. He's tough as nails. That's all I was describe him. He's tough as nails. He'll hit anybody, he'll cover anybody, you know, and he's not that big of a bill as far as like muscle wise, you know, but he can run anybody, can cover anybody, he'll come up and hit. He's very talented. There's not one thing he can't do because he has so much speed, you know, and speed kills in today's game, you know. So, I mean, just I think going in this year, is whatever they have him set at, he'll just be good at, because I feel like last year, you know, they just had him bouncing around, you know, especially at our level, you got to have somewhere where you can stick, you know, because not every player can just bounce around throughout the season, you know, from one position to another and be at the top of their game, you know. So I feel like this year they're going to have it set for what he's going to do, and he's going to be lights out with it.
Ugo, a lot of the times when we're talking to the players, it's a lot of new faces that they're bringing in, and so we're having to ask, you know, have you spoken to this guy? Have you spoken to this guy? But with you, obviously, you know all these guys already. I just want to get your thoughts on Tyrann Mathieu as well. The Saints' defense has a bunch of veteran leaders on it up front with Cam Jordan and the linebacker room with DeMario Davis, and then obviously the secondary with Tyrann. So your relationship with Tyrann and the leadership he brings to that DB room?
I have a really good relationship with Tyrann. First, he was my favorite player growing up as a kid. I mean, I dyed my mohawk in high school, the blonde. Literally, I tried to be like the Honey Badger. I was committed to LSU. I wanted to do the whole Honey Badger, the whole Honey Badger journey, you know. But he's a good dude, man. For a vet like him, especially as a DB, he's like one of my best DBs, like vet that I've had throughout my whole professional career, you know. And like whatever you need as far as on the field, off the field, he's so wise to guide you through that because he's been through so much, you know, and guys before him been through so much they poured it on him. So now he's just paying it forward, you know. And I feel like him on our squad, and he's another big reason why I wanted to come back, because he's such a, like, when he's not on the field, he doesn't even have to do anything, but his presence on the field makes everybody else want to just play better, you know. So when he's on the field, like, you feel like, oh, something's just missing, you know. But just him being with us, you know, staying there for another year, just it's good for the team.
Ugo, you brought it up, and I'll let you tell the story, because I know you were verbally committed to LSU and coaching change. And people say, man, how the hell a guy from Tennessee ends up at Oregon? But you got a real good story behind that, so I'll let you tell it.
Oh, yeah. So I was committed to Ole Miss my junior year. And going into my senior year, Ole Miss wanted me to come in June, because I already planned my senior year to graduate early to be done in January. So once January was coming, they're like, oh, no, we don't want you to come in early. We want you to come in June. I was like, man, I can't do that. I don't want to sit at home from January all the way to June and just be doing nothing. So that's when John Chavis and I forgot the D coordinator's name. They call him Chief.
Yeah, John Chavis. And John Corey, Chavis. Corey Raymond and John Chavis.
Yes, exactly. So John Chavis and Les Miles came to my high school when I decommitted from Ole Miss, And I'll never forget it. Literally, they came in the hallway, and all the kids were just going crazy. Like, because this is when LSU was really good at this time. They're really good. 2014 going to 2015. They're really good. They're good. They're a good ball club at this time. And my head coach calls me into the press conference. I mean, into the conference room, and I didn't know who was at the school. I didn't know who was there. And I came in off, and I came in the room, and it was just them two sitting there. And, you know, John Chavis and Les Miles. Really, Les Miles was talking. He's like, "Yeah, man, we really want you. We like you a lot. You remind me a lot like Tyrann Mathieu. You know, we can use you as a returner, play DB." And I was like, "Oh man, I'm stoked." So we had that conference, and then later on that night, they came to my house. And they're like, "Yeah, we want to offer your." They told my parents, "Like, we want to offer your son a full scholarship to LSU." So fast forward, I had LSU and Tennessee on the table, and I ended up committing to LSU over Tennessee. And Tennessee made a big push to come get me. They flew on their private jet once they found out LSU came to my house. And Butch Jones and then their recruiter coach that was in my area at that time, I can't remember his name, came to my house. And they were trying to give me a little last-minute spiel before I committed. Like, "Hey, make sure, you know, you want to be with Tennessee brick by brick." That was their slogan back then. And I ended up committing to LSU over Tennessee. And then literally after I committed to LSU, like, probably hours later, they had their bowl game here in Tennessee, which is funny, against Notre Dame in the Music City Bowl. And John Chavis ended up leaving to go to Texas A&M. So now it's like, everybody's on social media. At this time, Twitter wasn't where it's at today. So it wasn't like everybody was on it, but enough people were on it to get to me. Were like, "Oh, Ugo, how you commit to a school where the coaches leave and they tell you, blah, blah, blah." And I called John Chavis. His phone goes straight to voicemail. Like, when it happened, I like, go straight to voicemail. Literally 48 hours later, he pops up out of nowhere on Twitter, DMs me, like, "Hey, Ugo, what's your number? I'm going to call you." He calls me like, "Hey, you want to offer your full scholarship at Texas A&M? I'm like, "Man." I'm like, "What? I just committed to you at LSU. Now you're gone." I called Coach Raymond. I was like, "Hey, do you still want me to come to LSU?" I'm like, what do y'all want to do?" He said, Coach Raymond said, "I'll be honest with you, Ugo. So I don't know if I'm going to have a job here in a few weeks, you know, because, you know, back then when the head coach got fired, they cleaned house. The new head coach bringing his whole staff, you know." So I was like, "Okay." And I went back to the drawing board. I was like, "All right, I'm leaning not to go to LSU no more." I called Tennessee back. Tennessee said, "Oh, we already moved on from your class. But Butch Jones said, "I'll call somebody else to see if they want you in their class." He reached out to North Carolina. North Carolina said the same thing. So, "Oh, we already moved on from your class." So now I'm at home in January, not even at school, just working out, going home. And then my trainer reaches out to Jim Harbaugh's assistant at the time at Michigan. He said, "Hey, I got this 4-star DB into your program. Are you willing to give him an offer or a visit?" He gets a text back and says, "Hey, this is not so-and-so, but I need DB's bat in this class. Can you give me his transcript and all that information?" And that message went to Oregon and not to Michigan. So that's the crazy part, right? So Coach Neal, the DB coach, he calls me. You know, he's talking to me like, "Yeah." Mark Helfrich was the head coach at Oregon at the time. He said, "Yeah, we need just good kids with good grades and all that stuff." Because at the time, Oregon couldn't even have camps because they were suspended from whatever Chip Kelly had done. So they couldn't have camps. So like, "Oh, we're trying to change the image. Like, we're bringing kids with good grades and all that." I'm like, "Well, I have a 3.6 GPA, so there would be no issues with that." And then they ended up sending me a video on Twitter like 2014, like at the Autzen Stadium, on what it looked like on like a video. If I just turned the video to the stadium, I could just turn my phone and like I could see the whole stadium. It was crazy. So after the Music City Bowl, but after the Rose Bowl game against Florida State where they beat them bad, they gave me a scholarship at that time. And once they gave me the scholarship, I signed without even visiting or anything. Signed there.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. It's super crazy. So when I signed there, honestly, I didn't even know where Oregon was on the map. I was like, "Let's go. We're going to Oregon. I seen the uniforms. I seen that they're winning. I seen enough. Let's go." I told my family, "Let's go." We get on the airplane. I literally, like that movie, "Are We There Yet?" I kept asking my mom and dad, "Man, are we there yet?" They're like, "We took two planes." I'm like, "It's super far." And I get there, and Coach Neal, my DB coach, he welcomes me and my parents in. You know, he gets me moved into my apartment and all that stuff. And the rest is history.
Ugo, I got to visit Oregon a few years back in the campus and the facilities. Mm-hmm. I've told this to Charlie. It's the Taj Mahal. Now, again,
pictures, Ugo. It looks nice.
Phil Knight got a few nickels in his pocket. Okay. He can afford to pay for it. But, man, they got some unbelievable facilities at University of Oregon.
It's crazy because, like, even when I come back to Tennessee, I wear all my Oregon stuff because, like, being from the South, you don't see stuff like that, like out there in Oregon. Like I show all my friends all the new stuff I get, like all the time, and like they put when somebody invests in something, Phil Knight is the symbol of how you invest into something, because it's just everything just looks completely nice. Barbershop in your locker room, you can put a pin code and open up your lockers and all that stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous.
One of the things too is, man, I can remember growing up and ran a little track, and Steve Prefontaine, you know, and he was sort of synonymous with Oregon because of the fact of, you know, his running skills. He was a long distance runner, and that's kind of how Phil Knight got broke into the business with the shoe industry, trying to get that shoe right for Pre. And now he's, man, Oregon's a juggernaut. I will say that football wise, man, they got some talent going there, and they've been able to get a lot of young men from either the California high school ranks or from the South to go there.
Yeah, that is true. And, you know, when I was getting recruited, like, the coaches didn't even want to recruit the South because they felt like they would waste their time getting there, because they don't think a kid would want to come all the way from Florida or Alabama all the way to Oregon because it's so far. But now they're getting all the kids, and NIL's opened up the door to get anybody from anywhere. You get a kid from freaking Canada if you could, like, you know. So I just opened the door for everything.
Ugo, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Again, man, congratulations on a new deal with the Saints, and we'll see you in some of the mini camps.
Yes, sir, man. I appreciate y'all having me again. Thank y'all.
Thanks
so much. Ugo Amadi. And, man, what a great story.
Yeah.
Recruiting story. People think, you know, man, I've heard some crazy stories. No, that one's a wild one. I mean, you talk about a swing from Ole Miss to LSU. Then Chief tries to get him to go to A&M. They misplaced the number, and they thought they were trying to get him a scholarship at Michigan. They got him a scholarship at Oregon.
He was all the way out to Eugene. Man. Yeah. Listen, Mike, I mean, we talked a little bit about it, too, with Ugo specifically, the effort that he shows from play to play every single time he's on the field. That's how you go from being a fourth-round pick to being entering year 7 in the NFL.
He's a tough dude out on the field.
He's
a tough dude out on that football field. When we come back, Scott Spinelli, one of our best guests that we have here on Sports Talk, to talk about the Sweet 16 tournament right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettier along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, one of our top guests here, man, covers college basketball like nobody can. Scott Spinelli. Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Always a pleasure.
Coach, yesterday we had on the head basketball coach from Nichols State, Coach Boog, Tevon Sadler, and always tease him about this. He's from Maryland, so I said, you know, he's just a college boy from Maryland. He don't know nothing about the real world, even though he played at Nichols State, but he grew up in that area. He thinks that Maryland has got a legitimate shot to beat Florida, and he said, I think they can win it all. Now, I don't know if I'd go that far, but your thoughts on Maryland, Florida, the matchup tonight. I know Coach Boog, man, I think maybe he's talking more from the heart than the head here, but your thoughts on Maryland, Florida tonight?
Well, first and foremost, I think, you know, like that game right there is obviously going to be a high-level matchup. I mean, when you talk about, you know, the both teams, they both have so many different weapons. Obviously, you know, Derek Queen is gets in terms of being a skilled guy that can go in and away from the basket, plays with a lot of energy. And they did really well in the transfer portal, picking up some guys that, you know, assume their roles. I mean, they can impact winning in so many ways. But to me, I don't know. I think that their depth, I think, is going to be an issue here tonight. I just think Florida is so much deeper than Maryland. And I do think Florida, you know, just because their size, they're going to be able to match up. And those guys that they have, you know, those bigs Florida has, I mean, they can get away from the basket too and defend, you know, a guy like, you know, Derek Queen. So I think, you know, you're going to see a matchup that I think will be very interesting. But I think as the game goes, I think Florida with their depth, you know, will wear Maryland down.
Arkansas, Texas Tech, this is kind of the dichotomy matchup here. Arkansas, fast-paced. They like to push it up the floor, take the three-point shot. Texas Tech, man, a really good defensive team. Your thoughts on that matchup? Because it really kind of strength against strength here.
thing about, you know, Arkansas, I mean, you know, listen, Arkansas, Coach Calipari's got, they're one of the more talented teams in the tournament, and he's got them playing their best basketball here late in the year. Obviously, John L. Davis has done it before at Florida Atlantic, and he's, you know, twice. I mean, so, you know, that was a very big pickup for Arkansas in the portal. But I do think in this game, I think Texas Tech, I mean, look, they're the type of team that, again, they can play both ways. They could beat you fast. They could beat you playing in the half court. You know, Toppin is as good as it gets. Good game, though. I think two kind of, you know, evenly matched teams in terms of talent. But I do think Texas Tech, just because of the fact that they have such a tenacious defense, at the end of it will win out in that game. But I think that will be a really good game, too.
Coach, it kind of felt like a win-win-win situation when you see, you know, Coach Cal moving to Arkansas. He's got them in the Sweet 16 in his first year. Coach Pope leaves BYU and then takes over Kentucky. He's got them in the Sweet 16 their first year. And then Coach Young takes over BYU, and he's got them in the Sweet 16 as well. The matchup tonight between BYU and Alabama, I'm really looking forward to. I mean, the books are all over this about it being a very high-scoring affair between two elite offensive teams. We saw BYU kind of squeak out that victory against Wisconsin in another very high-scoring affair, and now they get to play another very good offensive team in Alabama. What do you expect from this matchup tonight?
Coach, they can't put the total high enough.
No, they really can't.
Listen, I think you have, again, what's happening this year, I'll get back to the matchup, as you guys, when we came in last time, we talked about 25 teams or so that could upset a one, just because, you know, there's a legit 25 teams that have so much money in the NFL. This, you know, a lot of these teams, you know, can compete with these other teams. And the NCAA tournament has kind of been a little bit uneventful, and I think it's going to become more uneventful over the next several years, just because these mid-major guys that are leaving these mid-major programs, they're taking the NIL money, and some of them are just sitting on the bench at the high levels. But getting back to this game, I agree with you. This is two teams that, you know, have a high-level, high-octane offense. Look, BYU has one, you know, guy on the team, 26 years old. I mean, like, they've got some experienced older guys that, again, you know, playing against BYU in the tournament over the years, we were at Texas A&M. You know, they're older, they're more experienced. And again, as you guys know, there's a big difference between a 25, 26-year-old than an 18, 19-year-old. And I think, again, not that Alabama's young, but again, that is a big advantage for BYU. But in the end, I got to tell you, I think Alabama's offense, you know, the way they play so free. They're in a flow type offense. I just think in the end, I think Alabama in this game, you know, is going to beat BYU. I think, again, it's going to be an up-and-down game. But, you know, something is going to give out. And I think, you know, the Alabama, if they can just, you know, contest the three-point line, you know, top foot, high hand, and make it hard for BYU, and then they finish possessions with rebounds, I think Alabama in this game will come out on top.
Coach, the South region, this is moving to tomorrow now, Ole Miss, Michigan State, Michigan, Auburn. And that just, both of those matchups could create such a fun Elite Eight, where you have potentially Ole Miss versus Auburn or Michigan versus Michigan State, that hated rivalry. Ultimately, we might get Auburn versus Michigan State as well. But your thoughts on those four teams? I think any way you kind of mix and match it, it's going to be a really fun Elite Eight.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. But when you think about this now, I mean, Ole Miss right now is nobody's talking about Ole Miss. And when you really look at what they've done in the first weekend, they were dominant. I mean, they were dominant, surprisingly so. I didn't think, you know, this is one of those teams that, you know, you say coming into the tournament, you know, who's going to get hot in the tournament? I think Ole Miss is the hot team right now. As good as Michigan State is, and you never can go against, you know, obviously a Coach Izzo team in the NCAA tournament, this is going to be a very interesting game here. I think Ole Miss right now is playing very, very good basketball. They defend. You know, they've got a team that, you know, is scoring from all different, you know, different positions. You know, this is going to be an interesting game. But I tell you what, you know, I hate to say it, but I think Ole Miss right now is playing better than any other team right now, at least based on that first week, and they are a very dangerous team. You know, and then you look at Auburn, Michigan. Look, Auburn is, you know, again, there's another team that can beat you fast. They can beat you in the half court. Michigan will propose a problem for them just because, again, they've got some big guys that can step away from the basket. Wolf and those guys can make threes. They can handle the ball. You know, so I do think that's going to be an interesting matchup. I think that game would be a lot closer, and it might be a grind-out game. That could be a game that if Michigan puts them in the half court, I think it's there in their best interest. I don't think they can get out and run with Auburn, in my opinion, unless they can get easy baskets, but I don't think they want to, you know, crash the glass. I think they want to get back and set their defense and make Auburn beat them in the half court. Not that they can't, but I think that's what Michigan's strategy is. But I think Auburn, in the end, will have too much. And I think Auburn-Ole Miss. Any matchup there, as much as I thought these SEC teams would beat each other up, and they did. We lost a lot of them in the first weekend. You know, these other teams are that good, and they're that complete, and they are older and experienced.
Coach, before we let you run, I wanted to ask you, we had a listener call in. It's been a really miserable season for the Pelicans, and so a lot of folks are looking for the NBA draft and the lottery specifically. The Pelicans right now with the fourth worst record in the NBA, they're going to be picking between 1 and 8 if it ends up that way. I just wanted to ask you if there's any kind of prospects that you're really looking for Pelicans fans to watch in the Sweet 16 over this weekend.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, look, the NBA right now, you know, if you really look at the, you know, the formula of, you know, a team like Oklahoma City and how they built their team, and it took years, right? It just, they were in that rebuild mode. But they did a really good job at evaluating guys and getting value on players that weren't necessarily the top guys that were going to be lottery picks and first round guys. There is so many good players out here right now. And I think the old, you know, the old philosophy of, hey, we got to take younger guys. Well, you can take younger guys and develop them. By the time they develop, you know, you're going to have to pay them a max contract if they do. I think in New Orleans' case, I think they've got a tremendous front office. Listen, Bryson Graham is a kid that I recruited. He played for us at Texas A&M. He's there on there in their front office, and I think he's got a keen eye for talent. So I think Pelican fans can really count on him. What I believe to be key for the Pelicans, not just in the, you know, this first round, they got to find those diamonds in the rough. And when you look around, I've seen a lot of players this year that I think are guys that have a lot of value that might not necessarily be talked about in the first round, you know, in the draft, but really good players. And I think that's what the Pelicans are going to have to do to really get their team to where they want it to be, championship caliber.
Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, always great insights. We love to have you on. And I think it'll be an exciting weekend, college basketball here. Love the matchups.
No question about it. No question about it. Guys, it's always a pleasure. I love being on the show with you guys.
Thanks so much. Coach Scott Spinelli does a great job covering college basketball and certainly the Sweet 16. Everybody got a lot of opinions, but he's one of the first ones today that picked Alabama. Most people are picking the upset here with BYU.
BYU is the hot pick. Alabama is still favored 4.5 points here, Mike. You know, it's going to be back and forth. Alabama scares me a little bit because if they go cold from three, they can lose to anybody. But we'll see what happens tonight. BYU's not exactly great at guarding the three-point line.
And he's on Texas Tech like a lot of people are.
Yep.
A lot of people think Texas Tech, tough matchup for the Razorbacks. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number two right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettiglia along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody at 6:30 tonight right here on the Big 870 WWL, LSU baseball as they play the Mississippi State Bulldogs, and first pitch will be at 7 o'clock tonight. We'll be back with a little bit more Sports Talk right after this news break on the Big 870 WWL.